I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KBCR. Thanks for listening. Today on the program, I'll talk with Gail Ann Hurd. Many may know her from the slew of films that she's produced, or some may know her name as the executive producer of a little television show, The Walking Dead. But today's conversation will focus on her newest documentary project, Mankiller, which is the powerful story of Wilma Mankiller, who led the Cherokee Nation as the first woman to be elected principal chief. Mankiller will air on KVCR television on March 22nd at 8 p.m. Gail will share Wilma's life challenges and her many accomplishments on today's Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. It's all ahead right after the news. Stay with us.
Support for Lifestyles on KVCR comes from Dr. Ingrid Trinkel in Redlands, providing medical and cosmetic dermatology, including PicoA laser treatments for tattoo removal. Information and a list of services online at clearmyink.com.
This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. I'll get to my conversation with Gail Ann Hurd in just a few seconds. But first, I wanted to let you know that it's springtime. And to some, springtime means flowers, daylight savings, or baseball season. But on public radio, it also means pledge drive. No, I'm not going to ask you to pledge right this minute by calling 877-512-8843 or going to our website at kbcrnews.org. I just wanted to bring it to your attention that soon you'll start hearing messages from members who support the station and why. But I am hoping that you have a few reasons of your own why you like and listen to KBCR. And in the coming weeks, that you'll make a financial contribution to support my favorite public radio station, 91.9 KVCR.
Wilma Mankiller, the first woman ever to serve as the tribe's principal chief.
A lot of people told her not to do it.
It was the very first time I'd ever faced overt sexism.
She had death threats.
They were fearful of a woman leadership.
She's appeared before congressional committees and met with three presidents.
I'm a pretty ordinary person, given an opportunity to do extraordinary things in my life.
Gail Ann Hurd is the producer and writer associated with many projects in film and in television, including The Terminator, The Abyss, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, The Incredible Hulk, Tremors, and many others. And for television, she is executive producer on The Walking Dead, Amazon's new series Lore, and USA Network Falling Water. And she's produced two documentaries on Native American subjects with The Tree Whisperer, the story of the Navajo Co-Talker, and Choctaw Co-Talkers. And now her most recent film is Mankiller. She is the executive producer of Mankiller, which premiered at several film festivals, including the Palm Springs Film Festival, where I had the pleasure to see it. And soon it will appear on PBS KVCR TV. The story is about Wilma Mankiller. First, I want to ask you, Gail, when do you sleep?
On planes?
Well, that makes sense. Tell us about Wilma Mankiller. She was the first female principal chief for the Cherokee Nation in 1985. Tell us who she was and all that she had to overcome.
Well, I think the remarkable thing about Wilma is that she overcame so many obstacles in her life. When she was very young, her family was part of a relocation program where Indians were supposed to be mainstreamed, and they called it urban Indians, essentially to assimilate all Indians so that culture and tribal lands would essentially cease to exist. And she was plucked from her community in Oklahoma and experienced her own trail of tears and grew up in San Francisco, where she became an activist and was part of the movement that occupied Alcatraz and had two daughters there, and then she moved back to the Cherokee lands in Oklahoma. And in fewer than 10 years, she had moved from essentially someone who was living with her daughters in a tent or a car on their property because their home had burned down, to the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. And this describes her remarkable journey.
Why was it so important to you to make this film?
I think there are so few remarkable women that have been highlighted in documentaries who are inspiring. We tend to focus on the ones who are troubled and I think that we need more bipartisanship in our country, and she was an example of that. When she first was asked to run for deputy chief, it was by a Republican who was very conservative, and she was obviously an activist Democrat. And I'd like to think that we can find more unity in the political sphere. And she also believed in servant leadership, that as a leader, you work on behalf of your constituents and your people, and essentially not top-down where you think of them as your employees. And that's something also I think that the political landscape has lost these days.
Well, I enjoyed the film and the telling of Wilma Mankiller's life. And a couple of things impressed me as well, and one that you just mentioned. I especially like two things. The fact that a liberal Democrat and effectively worked with a conservative Republican. How cool was that? And I really liked her second husband, Charlie Lee Soap. He seemed to be supportive of her and allow her to be the strong woman that she was.
Well, the wonderful thing about their marriage is that it was a marriage of two equals. But equal didn't necessarily mean that they both had to be chief.
Right.
It meant they both respected the qualities and the skills that each brought to the marriage. And I think that's the way we need to begin to reframe relationships. He was very strong and very powerful, a fluent Cherokee language speaker,
right.
Someone who achieved a great deal in community development, which is how they met, and never felt that her success in any way diminished him.
And that came across very, very true in the movie, which is what I loved about his, I'm calling him a character as if it was an actor, but his what we saw of him. I love that he let her be the woman that she was, and he was strong enough, too, to be the leader that he is. I'm talking with filmmaker and executive producer Gail Ann Hurd of Mankiller. How did they meet?
They met in the community development program when Wilma first moved back to the Cherokee Nation. She, her first job was in community organizing and to help with projects on the Cherokee tribal lands. And he was already very active in that cause. And they met by working together. And ultimately, you know, they collaborated on the project that for her entire life, Wilma felt was the most important one, which was the Bell Community Water Project.
Yes.
Which brought much needed water to a community that didn't have it before. And she believed, which I think is the synchronicity that she had with Ross Swimmer, the man who ran for principal chief with her as deputy chief, believed that it was important to not only teach people skills, but also have them invest their time and effort in improving their community. There's a Cherokee word that I think really describes this, and it's called gadugi. And gadugi means working in a positive way on behalf of and with your community.
Will you share some of the initiatives that she launched and the strides she made to improve the living conditions of the Cherokee Nation?
As I had said before, the Bell Water Project was a very important one.
Right.
But once she became chief, she believed that the future success of the tribe would lie in economic development. So economic development meant getting enough of a revenue stream that the nation was no longer dependent on federal funds from the U.S. government, and that they could improve not only education, but build and have a thriving health system and jobs. So even though it was controversial at the time and she was never actually a huge supporter of it, the only way that she saw to achieve that was through gaming. And she listened to the opposition and set up a bingo. That was the first thing that they set up. And she developed it as far from the traditional Cherokee areas where residential areas as possible, so that it was not something that people were driving by all the time, but at the end of the day, it made them economically self-sufficient, and they have the strongest, most successful health care in all of Indian country, and I think it's actually a model that all of us living in the United States would love to see implemented as well.
So she could see the value in it and what it would bring to her nation, but also was open-minded enough to look at it because it wasn't really something she wanted to look
at.
No,
she did not. She did not. When she was elected principal chief, this was not something that she wanted to achieve. It was something that she realized was essential for the future of the tribe,
right.
and also could be used for good, that it would bring so many necessary things for education, for health. The unemployment rate in the U.S. is, you know, the envy of many countries, but in Indian country, it often exceeds 50% unemployment.
Wow.
And so many people live well below the poverty line without running water, without heating. There was a case a couple of years ago of someone on another reservation who froze to death because there was no heating. So these are issues that go far beyond what we think of in our everyday lives, and are so important in Indian country. And she was aware of that because when she was in the San Francisco Bay Area, she worked on behalf of a number of tribes there and could see the issues that they faced.
Right.
There was a lot of knowledge that she was able to bring back with her when she moved back to Oklahoma onto the Cherokee tribal lands.
There were over 60 people interviewed for this film, including Gloria Steinem, who appears in the film. How long did this film take to produce?
The film took 6 years. And there are more than 700 pieces of, you know, whether it's photographs or home videos or, television station videos, personal photographs that we licensed for use in the film. And so tracking down all of that and making sure as we delved more deeply into Wilma's life and legacy, we wanted to make sure that we covered as much of it as we could in a 70-plus minute documentary.
After the break, I'll continue my conversation with film and television executive producer Gail Ann Hurd. She'll share how they raised the needed funds to complete the film, and The Walking Dead played a part. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez.
It was in San Francisco during the Civil Rights era that she found her voice and a belief in the power to make change.
Being a bystander to history was not her destiny.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag.
And that's where places like Alcatraz really made a big difference.
It ain't me.
It's always been a struggle to maintain tribal sovereignty. We're under siege. I tell you, it's going to take a fight.
My guest is Gail Ann Hurd, executive producer of Mankiller. Can you share a little bit about the fundraising efforts to make the film?
Sure. We received our seed funding, very importantly, through Vision Maker Media, which is the Native Voices arm of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Right.
But it wasn't enough to make the film. And when we put our budget together, we realized that we would have to raise 150% more to complete the film. And a friend of mine had told me that she'd funded a project on Kickstarter.
Uh-huh.
And going into it, I had no idea what that meant. Just to give you an idea, one of the pledge rewards I just completed yesterday. So it is a long, involved process. But we were able to involve not only our Walking Dead fan community, but also the Walking Dead actors who embrace this in a way that is absolutely phenomenal. And through our Walking Dead family, we over-raised. Our goal was $150,000, and we actually raised over $160,000 on Kickstarter.
Nice. That's great. You don't hear that often. How is her relationship with her daughters? She was very much an activist, but how is her time with her daughters?
You know, she was like all of us who work and are raising a family. You know, she was a mother. She was, you know, a wife, especially, once she and Charlie got married. And she took those roles incredibly importantly. And she was very, very close to Gina and Felicia, her daughters, who were involved in the production of the film, as was Charlie Soap, her widower, and also one of her best friends, Christina Keel. So she was always very family-minded. As Gloria Steinem says, who is one of her best friends. They were going to be writing a book together, and when Wilma became terminally ill, they had planned within a month to be sitting at Wilma's table in Mankiller Flats, Oklahoma, in the Cherokee Nation to write the book. So she was going to be writing from home. So she was very much someone who valued family, and that not only her own family, but her family of friends.
I'm guessing, as you just kind of alluded to, she probably still had a lot more things she wanted to get accomplished prior to her death. She had a lot of health-related issues. How did she ultimately die?
She actually died of pancreatic cancer.
Mm.
But she had myasthenia gravis. She had lymphoma. She had to have a kidney transplant during her lifetime. She was horribly injured in a car accident. And the after effects of that. In fact, the doctors told her she'd never walk again, and she proved them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I'm having a bad day, I realize it was nothing compared to what Wilma faced almost every day of her life.
She probably proved a lot of people wrong.
Yes. I mean, you know, when she first ran as deputy chief with Ross Swimmer, you know, the opposition to her on his ticket was overwhelming. And what we forget, and even what the Cherokee had forgotten, is that they were traditionally a matriarchal culture prior to their encounter with, you know, European culture. Women traditionally had to co-sign treaties with men, and they were ridiculed by the British, by the Americans, as being a petticoat government. And but to this day, real estate and clan membership flows through women in the tribe, you know. And when she ran for the last time that she was elected, so they barely won with over 50% of the vote, she and Ross. But when she ran the second time for principal chief, she was elected with over 82% of the vote.
How awesome. So I did ask you, do you know if she had other projects that she was wanting to work on, or that she had other goals in mind before her untimely death?
Well, I think she wanted to continue to inspire. I think it's important to remember that she self-identified as a feminist. She especially wanted to help indigenous women throughout the world. She reached out not only to tribal members in the United States, but to indigenous communities throughout the world. And I think that she wanted to continue to see positive developments. There was a constitutional crisis after her time in office in the Cherokee Nation, and she helped resolve that, even though she was out of office. Mm. And in fact, what we found when we screened at the Carter Library in Atlanta was that the Carter Center sent fair election representatives to oversee future elections in the Cherokee Nation. And that's something that she helped to create. And she very much believed in good governance.
You teamed up with Valerie Redhorse, who is the director and the producer. How did the two of you come to work together?
Valerie Redhorse Mole and I first met when I was intending to make a narrative film about the Navajo who served as code talkers in World War II. Because I felt it was important to tell indigenous stories along with indigenous voices. So I partnered with her, with Don Jackson, who's also a producer on this film,
right,
and Yvonne Russo. And so that's when we first met. It was also during that time that we were gathering information and reaching out to the code talkers on the Navajo Reservation, that they asked us to tell the real story, a documentary as opposed to a narrative fictional film. And we changed course and produced True Whispers together, and then Choctaw Code Talkers, and now Mankiller.
So tell me if you recognize these as Wilma's quotes. The secret of our success is that we never, never give up.
Absolutely.
Okay. Growth is a painful process. And we must trust our own thinking, trust where we're going, and get the job done.
Absolutely. In fact, on our we have a Twitter site at @mankillerdoc, and we quote Wilma every week for Wednesday wisdom, or you know, Tuesday or Thursday thoughts, and even, you know, Flashback Friday. So you can catch a lot of her greatest quotes on Twitter.
That's great. The film Man Killer is in collaboration with Vision Maker Media and will air on PBS stations throughout our nation and will air on KVCR-TV Thursday, March 22nd at 8 p.m. Gail, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your story.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, we want to make sure that Wilma Man Killer's life and legacy is kept going, and hopefully we will see her taught in schools around the country.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. It truly would.
Thank you.
I mean, she went from being a street kid in Oakland to being a member of the Ford Foundation.
She was not only the guardian of the centuries-old Cherokee heritage, but a revered leader who built a brighter and healthier future for her nation.
There is no single word to describe Wilma Man Killer.
Activist.
Advocate. Leader.
Mother. Wife. Chief.
I really didn't realize until I got older the impact Mom had on not just the Indian people, but the world.
In a just country, she would have been elected president.
Gail Ann Hurd, who is the executive producer of Man Killer, a film that will air on PBS and KVCR on March 22nd. March is Women's History Month, and we're celebrating women in history and what they fought to accomplish to pave a way. Shireen Awad tells one story of a woman and her challenges to defeat the odds.
They called her Welga. Growing up in the diverse agricultural community of Stockton, California, Dolores Huerta witnessed the poor treatment of farm workers firsthand, the dangerous conditions and extremely low wages. She decided she had to become the voice for the people and began fighting for the social and economic rights of farm workers. Her tireless journey eventually led her to meet Cesar Chavez, and together they formed the National Farm Workers Association in 1962. They campaigned for new laws, implementing great change through successful movements such as the Delano Grape Strike, and forging union contracts that ensured fair and safe working environments. The people called her Huelga, meaning strike in Spanish, and even now you can find Dolores at age 87, marching through the streets, continuing her nonviolent protests against discrimination and injustice. It goes on and on, she says, but you just have to keep fighting it.
That's Shireen Awad with a profile of one woman's leadership role. Next week on Lifestyles, we'll share another extraordinary woman in history and their hard-earned achievements. That's our show. If you missed any of it or would like to hear it again, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. If you do stop by our website, leave a message. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including David Fleming, Shireen Awad, Sean Houlihan, Roger Ashheim, and executive producer Rick Dula. And thanks to Ethan Bortnick for our theme music. And thanks to you for listening. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.
Support for Lifestyles on KVCR comes from Dr. Ingrid Trinkle in Redlands, providing medical and cosmetic dermatology, including PicoA laser treatments for tattoo removal. Information and a list of services online at clearmyinc.com.